If there's one place in the world where rising seas could cause a lot of chaos, it's Florida. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at baycareevents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, I'm Carson Cooper. Let's say hello to our guests. Harry Cohen is a member of Tampa City Council and has voiced concerns that Tampa St. Pete is at major risk for sea level rise. Davina Passeri is a research scientist with the U.S. Geological Survey, whose research focuses on the effect of sea level rise on things like storm surge. Stephen Tilbrook is an environmental lawyer with Gray Robinson in Fort Lauderdale who knows all about the impact of this on property values, land development policies, and the like. And he joins us from Fort Lauderdale. Welcome to Florida Matters.
Thank you for having
me.
Well, Harry Cohen, let me start with you. Are there any places in the Bay Area right now that are going underwater?
Well, certainly what we're seeing is the water tables are rising. And as a result, even an afternoon rainstorm that 20 years ago might have caused some flooding is now causing exponential flooding, where roads are impassable, cars are being destroyed, water is getting into houses that haven't seen water before. So more than anything, we're seeing an incremental change in the way normal weather impacts daily life.
You said water tables. When I hear water table, I think of the aquifer.
Right. You're talking about the groundwater above the aquifer. And if there's less room there for rainfall to trickle down, it starts to flood out. And one of the major initiatives that we've taken in the city of Tampa is to rebuild and strengthen our stormwater system.
Davina Passeri, what are some areas in Florida that are trouble spots?
Well, Miami's having a lot of issues right now with nuisance flooding, so that's high tide flooding. And that causes a lot of public inconveniences like road closures or backed up storm sewer drains. So that's an area that you can really see the effects of sea level rise. We have these higher tides coming from the higher water levels, so it's very evident.
Are we too quick to blame a rise in sea level for like nuisance flooding? In Tampa, there's a stretch of Fowler Avenue that kind of dips down, and it's just paved over everywhere. There's no place for the water to drain. So is it developments or really sea level?
Well, with nuisance flooding, it has happened historically, but where you can see sea level rise playing a role is that you're seeing it more days out of the year. So it's becoming more frequent.
Stephen Tilbrook, does South Florida have it worse right now in terms of unusual nuisance flooding?
Well, right now, we're experiencing different types of flooding. I think that Davina mentioned the tidal flooding that occurs from sea level rise, and that's like the king tides that come in the fall. But Harry also mentioned the afternoon rainstorm, and I wanted to comment on that because we experienced some extreme rainstorms in Broward County back in May, and what that really showed was that not only is our coastal hydrology changing, but also the inland hydrology. We don't have the capacity to manage stormwater events like we used to because of sea level rise and changes in hydrology.
Now, Davina, just this past week, NOAA issued a new report saying sea level in Florida jumped last year and is accelerating. It says by 2020, St. Petersburg will see a rise of 16 inches. That's 3 years. Does that prediction surprise you?
It doesn't surprise me. There's a lot of different projections coming out, and these projections are all based on uncertainties in future warming ocean temperatures and also ice sheet melt. So there's a lot of different factors that go into these projections, but it is important to keep in mind that there's a range of the projections. Mm-hmm. We really shouldn't focus on a single number.
Well, this topic was of great interest from our listeners, and I want to discuss a lot of their concerns and questions during our show. Susan Glickman notes that Tampa Bay area is lagging behind South Florida in terms of sea level rise prep.
Sea level rise is already underway, even if the world limits global warming pollution to the target in the Paris Agreement. What's scary is that the Arctic is now melting faster than any place on Earth. And while the Arctic may seem a distant place, what happens there will shape the future of Tampa Bay. That's why we must take action now. Southeast Florida has an internationally recognized regional climate change compact dealing with rising seas across county lines. Unfortunately, Tampa Bay has lagged behind South Florida in planning for these inevitable impacts. Yet we are as vulnerable, if not more. Pinellas County, the City of Tampa, and the Tampa Bay Regional Planning Council have done some sea level rise vulnerability mapping, but we must commit to regional planning. Fortunately, there are some leaders working to develop a West Coast climate compact to prepare Tampa Bay for the challenges that lie ahead for our community. How do we get our region behind this effort?
All right, Harry Cohen, there's a lot there, but let's start with her contention. Tampa Bay is lagging behind pretty much everyone else.
Well, I think she's absolutely correct, and it has to change. Unfortunately, if you look at the pattern of the way this region has dealt with problems like transportation, it's been very, very difficult to get regional consensus. And in this type of situation, it's even more important because weather events don't stop at county or arbitrarily drawn lines. And what affects one community is going to affect another. Tampa can make progress on its stormwater infrastructure, but if St. Petersburg can't handle its sewage and it's going into the bay, it's going to affect everybody.
If this region can't agree on, say, rail or whatever else, how would you even expect the Bay Area to come together on something like this?
Well, I think that people are starting to recognize that this is really a critical moment, that the federal government is not going to, in fact, step up and take the lead on this anytime soon. And if we don't start doing things as a region, we really are going to be facing a situation where it's simply too late. People want the community to grow. They want us to continue to prosper. They want to entice businesses and residents to come here. In order to do that, we need to demonstrate that we're dealing with the real challenges that we have.
Stephen Tilbrook, are you seeing an impact on property values and decisions on development right now because of this?
Yes. In South Florida, we do have a compact. We, in 2010, the four counties in Southeast Florida created the Southeast Florida Regional Climate Change Compact. And as a result of that, there is a climate action plan. And that plan requires the counties within it to actually make changes to their land use plans and revise development regulations in order to accommodate and plan for sea level rise. That results typically in higher development costs. And it also identifies areas that are more at risk for flooding. So you couple that, the higher development costs, which are across the board throughout the county, and then you have certain areas that have been identified as particularly at risk. The property values in those areas, they haven't directly, clearly been affected, but the access to insurance and the access to financing for land acquisitions and development in those areas will be affected as those plans become clear and that those areas become more clearly identified.
Harry Cohen, what is the City of Tampa doing now to mitigate the threat of rising sea levels?
Well, the most significant thing that we've done, which I referred to earlier, is that we have passed a major stormwater assessment in two parts. One is a maintenance assessment that basically doubled the amount of money we're going to be spending on cleaning out ditches and outfalls and canals and all of the conduits that actually move the water out of our streets and into Tampa Bay. The second piece is a major capital improvement program, basically rebuilding five major parts of the city's stormwater infrastructure. And we're also doing a lot of minor projects. And when I say minor, I mean under $1 million projects throughout neighborhoods in the city where flooding has been a problem. We are also beginning to look at our land development code to make sure that what we're requiring of new construction is adequate to meet the needs that are being demonstrated to us. Today, when new construction comes in front of the city council for permitting, they have to show that they can handle their stormwater. They have to invest in vaults and in retention systems to make sure that they don't burden the properties around them with additional runoff. And there is a movement toward a regional compact coming. I have signed on to it. Others have as well. And the hope is that in the same way that the counties get together and discuss other needs, economic development, transportation, that we might be able to do the same thing as it relates to climate change and issues of sea level rise.
All right. David Hastings is a professor at Eckerd College in St. Pete.
When I'm canoeing and swimming around Fort DeSoto, I notice that some mature palms are dying. It's worth noting that these mature palms are considered fairly hardy and resilient in normal conditions. As we know, they can withstand hurricane-force winds, but are they dying of the increase in salt levels associated with sea level rise?
All right, Devine, I want to go back to you on that. Sea level rise is attributed to melting ice caps. So wouldn't that actually make the ocean water less saline?
Well, so sea level rises from two things. One is the ice sheet loss. And so basically what happens whenever these large ice sheets melt, that displaces water elsewhere. And the other thing that really drives sea level rise is warming ocean temperatures. So as water heats up, it expands. It's thermal expansion is what we refer to it as. And so that causes a greater volume. So that's where we're getting the sea level rise. And it's a combination of those two things. And then regionally, sea level rise can be more or less than what the global rate of sea level rise is, depending on things like subsidence. So New Orleans, for example, is a region that has a lot of subsidence. The land is sinking. So that's a place where sea levels are exacerbated.
Harry Cohen, when I hear things like the salt is killing my plants, I think about saltwater intrusion. It's been underway in Pinellas County since the 1940s. I think the last drinkable water from a well in Pinellas was back in the 60s or so. This is clearly related to development, isn't it?
And, you know, Tampa Bay is a very, very fragile and very unique estuary. And any change in the proportion of salt versus fresh water is going to totally change the ecosystem. So there's so many different pieces of this problem that manifest themselves in different ways. You know, I wanted to come back a minute to the property values issue that was spoken about. In many of our communities, our waterfront property is the most highly assessed. It is really the backbone of our tax base. So this problem, it's going to have a human toll, but it's also going to have an economic toll, because as property values react to this change in either sea levels or in the flooding patterns inland, the local governments are going to find their budgets starting to constrict as a result of it. And that's exactly what you don't want to have happen when you really need the capital to invest in the infrastructure to deal with this.
We are talking rising sea levels in Florida, and your comments are always welcome. You can find us on Facebook. I'm Carson Cooper. This is Florida Matters. This is Florida Matters. I'm Carson Cooper. Some scientists say sea level rise in Florida is accelerating. How do we deal with rising water in Florida? My guests are Tampa City Council member Harry Cohen, Davina Passeri, a scientist with the U.S. Geological Survey, and South Florida environmental lawyer Stephen Tilbrook. We've also been taking questions and comments from our listeners, including David Westmark from St. Petersburg.
Hello, Florida Matters. Here are a couple of things I wonder about sea level rise in Florida. If the threat is perceived as real enough that even the U.S. military is undertaking many extensive measures to prepare, shouldn't our leaders be devising a plan of staged homeowner withdrawal from the coast now to prevent a dry land refugee crisis? Should banks be making 30-year loans on properties that are forecast to be physically underwater within the lifetime of the loan? Sorry, but I don't want to pay for that kind of stupidity.
All right. Harry Cohen, your reaction to that?
Here's the challenge. People want to live on the coast, and there is a tremendous drive to be as close to the water as possible. And our real challenge, I think, is to balance the wants and needs of people with what's really happening. I am not the one who is making loan evaluations for banks, but I will tell you that based on what I'm seeing, it's very hard for me to believe financial institutions are going to continue to issue long-term loans on things where they're sitting on property that's rapidly falling underwater.
Stephen Tilbrook?
Yes, South Florida is considering the economic and fiscal impact associated with sea level rise, but budgets typically don't go that far out into the future. And it's not like we're in imminent, it's not an imminent risk of losing actual land, taxable land to the sea here in Fort Lauderdale. There are engineering solutions, preserve properties, and we're investing in those engineering solutions. So while there's talk about how sea level rise may adversely affect local government budgets based upon property values, we haven't experienced it yet. Where we are experiencing is costs associated with infrastructure investment based upon pumps, raising streets, protecting water supply. All of those costs are being incurred, and we're having to shift that burden to the property owners in its local government that's investing.
That's exactly what's happening in the city of Tampa. We just recently passed two separate assessments, and they are not easy to pass. People, they're very controversial, and it takes a lot of talking to the public and educating people about what it is that you're trying to do, because nobody wants to pay more. But at the end of the day, you've got to maintain the system you have, and you've got to invest in making the stormwater system adequate to deal with our needs. MacDill Air Force Base is a major, major piece of the Tampa Bay economy. It sits at the end of the South Tampa Peninsula. The city of Tampa is going to invest $75 million in the stormwater system around that base to make sure that the place is still accessible, that it's still usable, and that the federal government knows that we're willing to make the investments necessary to keep it here.
Davina Passeri, I know one area the federal government ought to be really concerned about, and that would be the Cape, where they launched those rockets.
Yeah, for sure. And there are research efforts going on to see what the effects of sea level rise will be over in Cape Canaveral in that region, especially with the barrier islands out there. So with sea level rise, especially during storm events, you're going to get a lot of beach erosion. And, you know, that's something that needs to be studied more.
South Carolina has a law known as the Beachfront Management Act aimed at gradual retreat from the beach. No construction 20 feet behind the original dune line, and structures that are destroyed do not go back up, at least not so close to the ocean. The law also limits repairs to seawalls. After Hugo, though, the state agency that administers the law ruled that more than 90% of the beachfront houses that were seriously damaged could be repaired or rebuilt. These laws obviously were to address the threat of hurricanes, but it seems such a close tie to rising sea levels. Stephen Tilbrook, what about that?
Well, coastal areas, particularly beachfront areas, are subject to changes in the coastline. It's a natural effect that occurs along beaches where they grow or they shrink depending upon the currents and the way that sand moves. Southeast Florida has a coastal construction control line that identifies where construction is appropriate and where construction is not appropriate. And that control line is modified as the sandy areas change. The other aspect of this is that this is private property. Private property owners have rights to access to the beach and to the waters, and they have the right to use their property for an economically beneficial purpose. So it's a balancing act that the government has to go through.
Davina Passeri, part of that plan in South Florida that Stephen Tilbrook talked about was that Fort Lauderdale has raised the required height of seawalls. I'm wondering, what are the unintended consequences of making seawalls bigger and stronger?
It's not just making them bigger and stronger, but the problem with seawalls is that they can cause more erosion on nearby shorelines, so shorelines that are downdrift of the seawall. So while they can help with flooding, you might have some more detrimental effects to your nearby beaches.
Mm-hmm. Well, this South Carolina law sounds pretty draconian, but evidently it was easy to get around because the state agency, as I mentioned, went ahead and let 90% of that building take place. Clearly, there are local governments who just don't want to lose this huge chunk of the tax base.
Well, I mean, you can understand that because if you take Florida, for example, where the legislature is continually assaulting the money that local governments receive, every dollar that disappears is really coming from the discretionary parts of the budget, the things that people want, the stormwater relief, the paving of streets, parks, pools, real quality of life things. So we don't want our tax base to erode. But on the other hand, we have to recognize what's happening and we have to invest in the infrastructure to at least make sure that what is being built responsibly.
All right. Our listener, David Westmark, brings up another good point.
Sea level prediction models show that my house in Southeast St. Pete could be on an island by as early as 2035 to 2040, along with 10 to 12 other houses. How will we get to the mainland? How will emergency services reach us?
Harry Cohen?
Well, I think that when you see the regional transportation planning agencies putting forth their 30 and 40 year plans, mobility and commuting are not the only things that are driving some of our priorities. We have to be thinking 20 years out. I think particularly about evacuation routes, and I think an awful lot of what you're seeing, particularly in some of the roads that are controversial, is that they are being built with evacuation routes in mind, and the size and scope of what's being proposed is really driving home with people how serious this problem is.
I do wonder about his fear of a dozen or so homes eventually being rendered on an island. And building bridges and all that. Who would pay for that? Are taxpayers responsible for those who made a choice to live in a vulnerable area?
Well, what if they didn't make the choice to live in a vulnerable area? Some people may find themselves living in a vulnerable area having had no idea 10 or 15 years ago when they bought their property that it was a place that might be at risk.
Okay, but I still hear homeowners in Hardy County saying, why should I help waterfront homeowners?
As a society, collectively, we do have a joint responsibility for our infrastructure, for the types of major projects that are going to be necessary to make a real impact on this. I think it's not fair to say that we don't all play a role in it. We certainly all get the benefit of the higher property values on the coast that pay for things like public safety and other important things to the community. On the other hand, I think there is something to be said for the fact that there does have to be some differential and there does have to be some weight attached. In the stormwater program that we passed in the city of Tampa, we tried to measure the impact on the individual ratepayer based on the amount of impervious surface that they have on their property. That means that if your property holds its water and you have a mechanism for dealing with it, you may not pay as much as someone that has a tremendous amount of paved space.
All right.
So it's going to take some real work by local governments, by the state government, to figure out the right formulas to make it fair and equitable for everybody.
All right, a listener wrote us on Facebook with his theory as to why all this talk of man-made global warming is a hoax, but he brings up a pretty good point here. This has become so politicized that scientific debate over warming and its causes, it's almost non-existent today. He says the mainstream media is demagoguing the issue. And Davina Pizzeri, you're a scientist. What do you think about how this issue has evolved in recent years?
Well, the scientific community is in agreement that sea levels are rising and that there is global climate change occurring. There's a lot of research efforts going into how much humans contribute to this. So that is still an ongoing study. And, you know, I think as scientists, it's really just our duty to provide as much scientific data as we can to these politicians and also to stakeholders and managers so they can make informed decisions about how to move forward about these risks.
A New York Times columnist, Brad Stevens, wrote a piece recently saying how absurd it is to blindly support climate change without listening to both sides. That's all he said, basically. And he received a landslide of hate mail and threats. I mean, that's just stunning.
Well, I think Davina really put it very well in sort of encapsulating where the debate is. I think there is a general consensus that climate change is happening, that it's real. There is some disagreement about how much humans are contributing to it. But here's the thing. if we're wrong and we overreact, it's going to cost us some additional money. If we're wrong and we underreact, it really could have cataclysmic consequences for the entire world. And I think that the reason that the level of vitriol has gotten so high is partly because of the environment that we're in this country, where voices are just raised and passions are strong about a number of issues. But I also think there's tremendous frustration that the federal government and the state government under its current leadership does not seem to be taking any kind of concrete action on this, and time is ticking. And I think the president's withdrawal from the Paris Accords really sent a signal out to the world and to people in the United States that we were retreating from this issue, that we're not stepping into it and leading the way that we should be.
I don't know if that's exactly what Trump's intention was when he pulled out. He said it was just a bad deal, that it would cost Americans jobs, it would cost the country lots of money.
I think that's what he said, but I'm not sure I agree with that.
Stephen Tilbrook, what are your thoughts?
The withdrawal from it really sends a message to South Florida and to Florida in general that we're on our own. Our local governments are ground zero. In Southeast Florida, we have the Climate Change Compact. It sounds like on the West Coast, you may be considering a climate compact there as well. But local communities are going to bear the burden of planning for and addressing sea level rise, and we can't look to the federal government for support, and it looks like the state of Florida is not helping us either.
Davina, was Paris our best chance or our last chance to keep sea levels from rising?
I don't think so. I mean, as a scientist, it's, you know, we're, the science is going to keep going. It's not going to stop. We're going to keep studying why this is happening and what are different ways that we can mitigate this or adaptation measures in the future for specific areas to mitigate flooding and sea level rise.
Harry Cohen?
You know, I certainly am hopeful that the current administration will continue on the road to addressing climate change, even if it's outside the Paris Treaty. The fact of the matter is, though, local governments have to do what they can to take it into their own hands to protect their own communities. And in my view, it's investing in infrastructure and looking at our zoning and planning and making sure that we are requiring new construction to do the necessary things to protect us.
Tampa City Council Member Harry Cohen, Davina Passeri, a scientist with the U.S. Geological Survey, and South Florida environmental lawyer Stephen Tilbrook, thank you all for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
The conversation continues online. Stop by our Facebook page and leave your questions and comments, or email floridamatters@wusf.org. Florida Matters is produced by Stephanie Colombini, engineer is Craig George, and our show is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Carson Cooper. Thanks for listening.